Welcome to the podcast of Focus 580, featuring interviews with newsmakers and experts on international affairs and daily life, hosted by David Inge at WILL Radio, Urbana, Illinois. Please support this service by becoming a member and visit us on the web at will.uiuc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome to the second hour of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the show, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. On the 21st of March, voters who live within the boundaries of Champaign Unit 4 schools will be deciding on a $66 million building bond proposal that would, among other things, raise money to build two new elementary schools, to replace Dr. Howard School, and also do some significant renovations on other elementary school buildings. This morning, in this part of the show, we want to talk a little bit about the proposal and give people who are listening the opportunity to call in and ask questions. And we have here in the studio with us three guests. Dr. Arthur Culver, he is the superintendent of Champaign Unit 4 Schools. Gene Logus, he is assistant superintendent for financial services and operations for the district. And also Sam Johnson, he is an architect with the firm of BLDD, and they are a firm that's working to do the design work with the district. So I think between the three of them, they should be able to respond to most questions that people could ask. And as I say, we're doing this, we hope, to give people who will be voting in this referendum an opportunity, to, if you don't know the basics of the proposal, to get an idea about what it is the district is talking about doing, and then also to ask specific questions. And anyone's welcome to call. The only thing we ask of people who call in is that people just try to be brief so that we can get in as many different callers as possible and give everybody a chance. But questions, of course, are welcome. 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. I can't imagine anybody would need to make a toll call, but we do have that toll-free line, but which is 800-222-9455. But we definitely want to try to give priority here to people who live in Champaign, as I said, who will be voting in this upcoming referendum. Well, thank you all very much for being here. We certainly appreciate it. And I think we should all be ready to go. Are you all hearing? Okay. All right. Good. Well, let me ask you some basic questions here, and then as soon as we get some calls, we'll get them in. One of the things that the proposal calls for is to build two new schools. And this is one of those things that I think has generated some questions, because people say, people have pointed to the fact that there are empty seats now in the district, and they want to know how are you projecting that you're, by the time that these new schools will be built, that you're actually, and into the near future, that you're actually going to have enough additional students to fill them? Where are these students going to come from?
Well, that's really an excellent question. This is Arthur Culver, superintendent. And really, the kids are going to come from, I think, the new growth that's being projected by the city of Savoy, the village of Savoy, as well as Champaign city planners. We've gotten information from both Savoy and Champaign, and we've been told that in about 5 years, there'll be 3,000 new homes built, single-family homes. And that's not even factoring in the multi-family units that'll be built also. And we think it would certainly be irresponsible on our parts if we would assume that with 3,000 new homes, there'll be no new children to the district. So we've been very conservative, though, in our projections, and we're projecting that about 0.3 of a child would come from each home, which would certainly fill up two schools. But the other thing that people don't know is that the referendum, there's extensive renovation work at many schools, but in particular at Robeson Elementary School, it's going to lose about four classrooms, just because of program space and restrooms and other space that'll be taken up. So four classrooms will be taken up, so that's four classrooms fewer, which is about 92 kids. So when you factor that in, as well as the new growth, we feel like that there'll be plenty of children to take on the new seats. The other thing is that really we're not as empty as people think. We've been reading and hearing that there are about 220, for example, empty seats at Stratton Elementary School, and that's not true. We only have 60 seats that are vacant at Stratton, and we heard that there are 90 seats that are vacant at Garden Hills, and that's not accurate either. Gene, you may want to chime in on that one.
Well, David, what I was thinking, good morning, everyone. This is Gene Logos. I'm Chief Financial Officer for the school district. One of the points that I wanted to make, David, is that we really believe that we offer some excellent programs district-wide. We know our test scores are moving in the right direction. Our discipline is improving throughout the school district, and it's kind of like we're missing the fourth leg, if you will, on that stool, and that's our facilities. So we believe that with all these new homes that are going to be built, even using a generation rate of just 0.3 elementary students from every one of those homes will be 900 new students. And we think if we can upgrade our facilities at the same time as providing the excellent programs and the improved security and the great improvement in test scores, we're going to get the lion's share of those new students. And to not react to the growth that we know is coming, not to be proactive to the growth that we know is coming, we think would be to do great harm to the school district.
Well, how at the moment, how many empty seats do you have? What is your capacity and how many? How much under capacity is the district?
Don't have the...
Well, I have some information on Stratton as an example, because that's the classic example. A lot of people will tell me when I'm out on a speaking engagement, there's 220 empty seats at Stratton. We just came out of a planning meeting for next year where we're worried about being able to put all the classrooms in, all the kids in classrooms at Stratton. Right now, there are 60 available seats at Stratton. And again, we're worried about next year when we add a couple more strands to that school, we may run out of seats at Stratton. And so, unfortunately, there's a great deal of misinformation out there, and that's been important for Arthur and myself. This is probably our 35th speaking engagement where we've tried to get the facts out there to the community.
Can I add to that?
Yeah, sure.
If I could. This is Sam Johnson. From a school architect's perspective, we have an artificially high idea of what our capacity is because as we've built schools over the years and we've added to them, we didn't always add the support spaces. We'd add the classrooms, but without the teacher support spaces and the student support spaces. For instance, if you look at Washington right now, there are portable classrooms outside of Washington where faculty offices are being held because there isn't room within the building. Also, in that facility, we have moved our workspaces out into the corridors, which should be really kept clear for emergency egress. So we are using spaces because we don't have, we're using classroom space because we don't have it. So one of the ideas that was in the original report talked about remodeling adjacent classrooms to provide the appropriate student support space, and that would lower the capacity of the buildings. And just one other item I want to bring out. Everyone I've heard so far has really quoted the original study that was done. But if you look at page 45 on that study, it says that the distribution of students at the elementary grade level has been stable thus far, as hundreds of new houses are built in the northern sector and along the county edge of the city. However, circumstance will begin to change drastically between 2008 and 2013, as expanded facilities will be needed urgently to accommodate the new growth in previously unpopulated subdivisions. And I've heard people quote the report, but I've never heard them quote that particular article.
Okay.
And that, even though the demographer that was with the group that did the facility study, he didn't include the new growth in Savoy. That wasn't factored in at all. And in Savoy alone, we're talking about 900, within 4 years, 900 single-family units that'll be built. And again, as Gene indicated, we're making great strides at the elementary level with our discipline. We have, for example, 42% fewer discipline incidents last year than over the previous year. We have 48% fewer suspensions. Our test scores are going in the right direction. We've made significant improvements over the last 3 years at the elementary level. And, you know, we have great programs so that we feel that we're going to attract a lot of those kids to our district. Also, when you factor in the fact that having a school out in Savoy will also automatically get more students in the district because of Savoy not having what we call proximity A choice, which simply means that kids live within 1.5 miles of the school. And some of those parents have chosen to go to private schools because they don't have a school that's within a mile and a half of where they live. And having a school in Savoy, I think, alone will also attract more students to the district. So, you know, we're not really worried about filling it up because there's a misnomer about empty seats that we simply don't have. As I stated and Gene stated, there's only 60 vacant seats at Stratton, and there are probably about 50 at Garden Hills, but you hear of higher numbers. And if you were going to our schools and our elementary schools, there's a lot of classrooms, unfortunately, that have four or five teachers in them where they're serving different kids with special needs because we don't have enough program space. Even at Bodenfield, for example, the enrichment teacher has to instruct kids at the church next door. The kids go out into the weather and have to go over there for their enrichment period because we don't have space. And as Sam said earlier, we have kids that are being instructed in hallways, and those are just not optimal learning environments.
We have a caller here to talk with. Let's bring him into the conversation. Someone on the cell phone, they're in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have two questions. I'm a Champaign resident, and my children, three of them attend Champaign schools. And I have two questions. One is, why is the vote being held during the spring break when a lot of families will be out of town? I think some people find that suspicious. And then second, what will be the impact on property taxes, say, for a home that's valued at $100,000 or $200,000 in Champaign? What's the financial impact for residents? And I'm inclined to support the referendum, but I've heard a lot of discussion of those kinds of questions. So I'll hang up and listen to their responses.
All right. Well, thank you for the call.
Okay, I'll respond. I'm Arthur Culver. Well, we agree the date is not the best because we'll be on spring break and so will the University of Illinois. But unfortunately, we had no input on choosing the date. That's set by people that are higher than we are. We don't set the election dates. And we couldn't afford to wait until November because of the consent decree. We really are already behind the eight ball. We were supposed to open up two strands on the north, which is really two kinder, two first, two second, third, fourth, and fifth grade classes on the north side by the 05-06 school year. And the plaintiffs and their attorney, they understood waiting until we did a facility study so that we can package a referendum that would be inclusive of other needs in the district. But they said to continue to wait, they would use that as a leverage point to ask the judge to extend the consent decree. So they weren't willing to let us wait until November because that would push back opening up the new school on the north side to the 08-09 school year, which is the year that the consent decree is scheduled to end. So that's why we had to move forward and go now to the voters, even though it's not the best time.
Yeah, and I would hope people would know that March 21st is the Illinois primary.
Yeah, that's
there
the
is
Illinois
already
primary.
An election going on and that on that day, so you can't just say, "Well, let's go a week later and just have one just for this." You can't do that.
And the other question was
it had to do with the cost, Arthur.
Oh, yeah. The cost. Yeah, if you're a taxpayer that has a home valued at $150,000, then the cost would be $3.50 a month, or $42 a year. If your home is valued at $300,000, then of course it's $7 a month. And if it's a home that's valued at about $75,000, then it's $1.75 a month. So we think that even though the referendum sounds like a lot of money, but when you really look at it, because of all the tax base, we're blessed to have really a good strong tax base here. It's really not going to hit individual taxpayers too hard. Gene?
Arthur, if I could look at it one other way, please. We are the second lowest taxing district, school taxing district in Champaign County. There are about 15 different school districts that are partially or completely located in Champaign County, and our tax rate is $3.92. Urbana, as an example, is over $4.40. If we're successful with this referendum, our tax rate will go up to only $4. We will remain the second lowest taxing district in the area with quite a gap in between number two and number three. So sometimes that's another way to look at it as well.
Okay. Let me tell people who are listening to who they're listening to. I should reintroduce the guest. The last person you heard speak, Gene Logos. He's an assistant superintendent at Champaign Unit 4 School District. You're the chief financial officer.
David. Yes.
Arthur Culver is here. Dr. Culver is the superintendent. And also we have one of the architects who's involved in drawing up the plans for this work. His name is Sam Johnson, and he's with the firm of BLDD Architects. Questions again are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We're particularly interested here in giving people who will be voting an opportunity to ask questions. Let me ask another question that has come up in some of the articles that I've read. This may be an architect question, but of course anybody okay. can weigh in on it. One of the things that's proposed here is to tear down an existing school and build a new one. So we're going to tear down Dr. Howard and build a new school on the same site. And I think that there are some people who have the question, well, would not it be possible to simply renovate the existing building and save some money? Do we really need to tear it down, go down to bare ground and start from scratch to build a new building?
This is Sam Johnson again. That's a classic question that communities wrestle with all over the country. I'll give you a bit of history of what it was we did working with the committee. We projected costs in both traveling down both directions, renovating the existing facility or building new. And we projected life cycle costs. We don't want to simply compare first costs because that's not a true indication of the cost of an approach to a school district. And then we presented that information to the committee. In addition to presenting the costs, we also have to look at the educational adequacy of an existing facility. That facility has, I think it's at least 7 different levels. The major issue, we interviewed this, not the staff, but the principal, and asked her what were the programmatic issues that we needed to address here with any solution, whether it's renovation or building new. Her number one program issue was accessibility. Currently, folks who use wheelchairs, students or parents or grandparents or visitors, are prohibited from obtaining educational programs and services because they can't get into the building. So we would have to navigate all those issues. The original report that was done, the facility survey, said that if you were to invest in the building, you would have a building that could use modern infrastructure and things of that sort, but it still wouldn't be a wonderful educational environment. So that's sort of a cost-benefit relationship. What we did after comparing the costs for both, it looked as though the cost for renovating, projected over the next 40 years, would be very, very close to the cost for building new. So when the committee reviewed which decision, they decided that they felt it was a more prudent use of student or school district resources to go ahead and provide an educational environment designed to support the school district's programs. That was more important to the committee than it was the historical significance and accepting the program limitations of the existing structure.
So, and I guess from what I read, somehow people think that it would save a lot of money to renovate rather than build a new building. So what I hear you saying is that, yes, building a new building costs more, but the difference between doing the renovation and the building a new building is not very much.
Not projected over 40 years, no. I mean, you know, maintaining an existing building over the next 40 years, and buildings are comprised of systems that have finite lifespans. And so, you know, when you project it over that, it was very, very close. And so the community felt it was a better use of resources.
Sam, if I remember correctly, even the initial upfront costs were somewhere around $8 million versus $10 million.
Yeah, I thought it was a little over five for phase one. And of course, we had to scale back phase one. And the committee was free to choose what they wanted to include. So I think they eventually, got back to around five, just saying some of those other things were outside of what they felt they could afford. But regardless, when you project those costs over the any given lifespan, the costs of Dr. Howard were going to be, they're going to approach the cost of a new facility.
Okay. Yeah, and I think Gene's right. It did go up even more from the five because when they looked at it, they were looking at it as a building a two-strand school.
Oh, that's right.
And then the board made a decision that they wanted the school to be three strands as well as have four additional classrooms for gifted classrooms like they currently have. So when you factor that in, it would have cost, close to $8 million just to rebuild rebuild Dr. Howard in its existing structure. So when you factor in it only would be $10 million to get a new facility, then it just made more sense to go ahead and build a new one. But we're going to retain as much of the architectural things that people are really trying to keep. I think they're going to try to retain as much as possible. But at this point, until the school is designed, we don't know exactly how much of that tradition can be safe.
Okay. David, if I could jump in there real quick, please. Uh-huh. One of the nice things about the other two schools is they're going to be prototypes. These will be schools that the architects have designed before. So number one, we can get them done and move in at the beginning of the 07-08 school year. And I'm going to watch Sam's expression now. And number two, so that architectural design fees can be saved to the community as well. But I would think, Sam, from an architectural standpoint, the opportunity to work with the community to redesign a Dr. Howard that'll fit in that neighborhood would be a wonderful challenge for you.
Yeah, it's going to be fun reinvesting in that neighborhood. It'll be a fun design process and wonderful result.
All right. Well, let's talk with some other folks. We have two others here on hold. First in line number one in Champaign. Hello.
The thing that was just said about using designs that already exist is very important to the question that I'm going to ask. Architectural friends of mine have told me that at the time that Stratton was being designed and built, that they tried hard to introduce the concept of energy efficiency into the discussion, and that they were simply blown off. Now, without regard to what might have happened then, I think it's very important to know what sort of policies the school district has toward energy efficiency in designing for the future. And I'm wondering if they're going to use designs that were made sometime in the past, whether energy efficiency was important in the concept of those designs.
Okay. Well, again, I think probably Sam Johnson, the architect, should take the first swing at that.
That's a wonderful question. The two biggest issues facing school districts today are student achievement, number one, and operating costs, particularly energy costs. So you're right. We are using prototype designs with one exception, and that is our energy systems, our mechanical systems. The school district wants to investigate what are called green building design concepts. Green building design means there are a lot of different things. Some people call it sustainable. LEED is a certification system, but sustainable systems are those systems that meet the needs of today without compromising the needs of tomorrow's schools or tomorrow's community to meet their own needs. So what we are going to look at is breaking from the prototype on the mechanical systems and investigating things. The number one thing we're investigating is a geothermal heating and cooling system. So we're going to model our energy costs before this is built to ensure that these are energy efficient buildings. They're going to be much more energy efficient than the prototypes. I hope that answers the question.
Does that get at your question?
Well, it addresses it at least, and I thank them for the answer.
All right. Let's go to line number two. This is also someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good.
I'm calling to ask a question to the architect and to Mr. Culver. I understand that the architectural firm and the architect that is speaking there is already chosen, and if the referendum goes positive, then he will get... He's vested. I mean, he will get pay versus if the referendum doesn't go, he won't get pay. I mean, I want to make sure that that is disclosed, that the architect is not being impartial, that it has a lot of to do with his future remuneration for the job.
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah, and that is the case. As in all the school district projects that we work with, and we work with 40 school districts across the state, we will help a school district put together a plan, project possible costs. We're not supposed to advocate. We're supposed to simply provide the facts for folks and our opinion. Obviously, that's what we're retained for, but our opinion. And if the project is successful, we'll be the firm to implement the design. That's correct.
Right. So my question would be, why not to first get a firm and pay for the study of what is needed? Even though maybe a little more expensive at the beginning, it may save a lot of money at the end, because somehow your answer is tinted by what you want. I mean, you are not impartial.
I think Dr. Culver wants to
respond. Arthur Culver, Superintendent, let me address that. We did do a facility study, and it was with a different architectural firm. The facility study was done by Leggett Architects, and it started, it was done the 03-04 school year, and presented to the board and the public in the fall of 04. And then after the facilities study was done, it was a very detailed report. They had structural engineers, demographers, architects, mechanical engineers, a lot of people attached to the project. Then we put out an RFP, a request for proposal, for an architectural firm that would lead in the design and getting the work done. And that same architecture firm was not chosen. So this particular firm really didn't come up with things that were needed so they can, you know, get the work, because they weren't even a part of the study that was done in the 03-04 school year. So we feel like that their recommendations are certainly not biased at all.
Okay. Another, and this will be my last question, and I would like it to be addressed by the three of you, maybe. We have here reports that in the committee that was doing the forecasting and the trying to come up with the buildings needed and things like that. They many people in that committee felt they were railroaded. The decision was made before the discussion started, and it was really imposed from the top down. And I'm signing off now, and I would like you to address that.
Okay, I'll address it first, and I think everybody wants to chime in on that one. We were all a part. First of all, I want to thank the Facility Study Committee. They did a great job. There were administrators, parents, community members, business leaders. It was a wide spectrum of people. And we really did not go in with a plan. The architectural firm, Leggett Architects, they did leave us with five different alternatives for us to choose from, and none of those were really chosen. What they really did is looked at the data and looked at new demographic information that was not available to the demographer when the first study was done, and came up with what they thought would be a good plan for the district at this time. Truthfully speaking, the needs of the district, if you consider the whole district, really totaled about $160 million. They realized that that was too much to present to the public at one time, so they decided to focus on the elementary schools and get them done in phase one and take care of the middle schools and the high schools in phase two or phase three.
Well, it was an interesting experience working with our superintendent. This is Gene Logos, the CFO, working with our superintendent to facilitate these meetings of about 30 or 35 citizens from all parts of the community. And I will tell you, at one point, we had them broken into four different groups. And at one point, three of the four groups were looking at a much larger bond proposal, perhaps wanting to go for the entire $160 million. And Arthur was right in the middle of that, quite honestly. I think at that point, Arthur, you were a proponent of trying to go for it all. And then some other information came to light. We started talking about the fact that the communities, the biggest one the community's ever passed before, is $21 million. There was a poll that was also done that showed there wasn't significant support for a referendum beyond about $80 million. And as a result, the committee took it upon themselves to look at that where they were and to really do an about face and try to carve it into two pieces, two logical pieces, really. Take care of all of the elementary needs in the first phase, and then hopefully take care of all the secondary needs in the second phase. But I've got to tell you that as part of administration, I was never part of any meeting that said, let's go in and steer them in one direction or the other. That just did not take place.
And if I do it, yeah, okay, sure. I have a chance. I'm Sam Johnson again with the BLDD Architects, and we had a significant part in facilitating the meetings. We do this around the state. We're the architect for the Normal School District, the Decatur School District, similar size district with similar issues. On the last day, the day that we were supposed to make a decision, as we were working, we ask for a vote. We get a vote from the four committees, and we ended up with very close to a split vote, which I must have looked like a deer in headlight. I was almost paralyzed. That's the worst thing that we can do. Well, Gene Logos saw the opportunity because in the meeting at that moment, people were starting to jump across and develop consensus, jump across the committees. They started to realize what were the key sticking issues, and Gene was able to work with the overall group to come up with one plan that got consensus that night, which none of us would have expected. The plan that we ended up with was one that was able to get consensus. I must say also that in my experience, there are always folks who have very passionate feelings for very good reasons, and some of those needs aren't met, and it's because they didn't reflect the majority of the group.
And one other thing, too, is the committee only made a recommendation to the administration, and we took that same recommendation and made it to the board. And the board, really, they looked at it, and there were board members that wanted more because they knew the needs were much greater than what was being presented. But they even came together, and that was difficult because no board member got 100% of what they wanted, but they all got about 80 to 90% what they thought was important, so they felt was important. So they decided, you know what, I can live with that 10 or 20% that I didn't get, because 80 or 90% of what I wanted and what I think is important is in the referendum.
We have two other callers and another one coming in now. Let me just very quickly introduce again our guests. Dr. Arthur Culver, he is the superintendent for Champaign Unit 4 Schools. Gene Logos is an assistant superintendent. He is the chief financial officer of the district. His official title, he's an assistant superintendent for financial services and operations. Also with us is Sam Johnson. He's an architect. He works with the BLDD architectural firm that is working with the district on coming up with this plan that we have talked about. And again, basically what we're talking about here is a building bond proposal. It'll be on the ballot the 21st of March. So this is next week. We're talking about people in Champaign Unit 4 can vote up or down on this. It would raise money to build two new elementary schools, to replace Dr. Howard, and to do significant renovations on other elementary school buildings. And also one small part of this is to purchase land for a projected high school.
Correct.
Sometime that's in your next phase. That's not.
No, the land, we're going to purchase the land now. Yes.
I mean the building is, it would be in the next sort
Correct.
Of part of this. But yes. We're talking about $1 million.
About $1 million. We're hoping that we can attain that land for $1 million.
Okay. So that is also part of this. But the two biggest chunks of this would be the money for the three elementary schools. That's about a little over $30 million. And the renovation at the other schools, that's a little under $30 million. So those are the two biggest pieces. We do have some other callers. And again, I want to try to get in as many people as we can here. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana. Let's go on to another Champaign person, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, I've been listening to this interesting discussion. I'd like to focus this, send this question to the architect. I work with school teachers throughout the state. And what I'm worried about is the attrition of teachers. Most of my teachers I work with are quitting after 3 years in service. In doing some studies, some research, what teachers said, one thing that is just really difficult for them is a lack of private space at the elementary level. They don't have an office. They don't have a place to get away to have their things to sit. They don't have a telephone where they can call if the sick child has strep throat. They have one bathroom in the teacher's lounge, and a half an hour for lunch with things lining up. So I guess I'd like to challenge you, if you're doing a prototype, to start to think about the kinds of creature comforts that most executives take very much for granted and elementary classroom teachers are never given them. Think about the teachers and make plans for places so that they can have a livable workplace. And I will hang up and just offer that to you.
All right, well, thank you. You comment on that if you like.
Certainly. Those are wonderful comments. And those comments reflect the needs of a modern educational environment. There are teachers are professionals, just as in your analogy of teachers needing this professional areas is very valid. And that's why our modern school designs do incorporate very different spaces than those of the past. You'll see a number of offices in today's schools that you wouldn't in yesterday's. And you've got examples of those in your newer schools as compared to your older schools. So those are very important issues. They will be included. And to say, I do mean to mention that we are using prototypes and they are modern prototypes, but they will undergo some slight changes. Not some so slight. I mean, the mechanical systems changing from those that are designed to geothermal is a significant change. Also, in terms of green building applications, that's going to change those facilities as well. They'll probably have more windows to get natural light deeper into the facilities, but I don't want to get off her comments, and we do take that very seriously, and it looks like Arthur wants to add to that.
Yeah, and the other thing is that's why we felt that it was critical to move forward, because the plan will also not just the elementary schools, but even the secondary schools, we're going to improve the safety and security improvements, such as, and that was one thing, working intercoms, phones in the classroom so that the teacher can phone into the office when there's an emergency. Even ceiling fans at the middle and high schools that don't have air conditioning, so that they would be a little more comfortable until we can get to the phase two and phase three. And the other thing is we did get some criticism because we are reducing Robeson by four classrooms. And the reason we're doing that is because of program space that's needed for teachers as well as restrooms. And so the caller is right. We do need to make sure that our facilities certainly meet the needs of students as well as the staff that serve the kids.
Can I just add one last thing? As we've discussed green buildings, there is another related movement called high-performance schools. High-performance schools are very similar to sustainable schools, LEED schools, and they have 8 key benefits. But the first 4 are, number 1, increased student achievement. Number 2, increased student and teacher attendance. Number 3, increased teacher comfort and appreciation. And number 4, lower operating costs. So in trying to develop a building which is designed on LEED green principles, high-performance principles, we hope to meet those or obtain those benefits.
David, I know we have other callers, but I really need to interject one thing, please. I've heard Sam talk about the new schools. I've heard Arthur talk about some of the safety improvements. Let's not lose track, gentlemen, of the improvements to the 8 existing elementary schools.
Correct.
And let's think about the better environments we're trying to put both those teachers, Sam, in and the children. As I'm sure the lady who called in knows that in some of our schools, we have pullout groups in the hallway where a teacher will be working with an English as a second language right next to a special education class, right next to a speech pathologist, right next to a physical therapist. That's not fair to the teacher. That's not fair to the child. And really, in my opinion, that's at the backbone of this whole proposal in those 8 existing schools to get those teachers and get those students in the best space that this community can afford, because every child deserves the best education that we can afford.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, let's talk with another caller. This is also someone in Champaign, and it's line 2. Hello. Yeah.
Thank you. Now, David, you may have addressed this at the beginning. I didn't hear. But I'm wondering, are you going to have a panel of guests on the other side of the issue to explore, you know, some of the objections to the plan?
No, I'm sorry to say that we're not. And I, my hope was that that kind of perspective, either I could try to represent it or that people calling into the show would represent it. Unfortunately, there's just no time in our schedule to be able to do that between now and the election.
Well, I mean, it seems inadequate and unfortunate, but and I want to preface this by saying I'm in favor of spending money on education. But there seem to be some very legitimate questions about this particular plan. And one thing that I wonder about also, and I just don't quite understand, is why Savoy is in the Champaign School District. And that may be, you know, a good thing to have it that way. But a couple of things about it. Just one aside, it seems a little cheeky of Savoy to, you know, want to be not have to contribute to the mass transit district, but they want to help have Champaign help pay for a new school. And the other thing about that is that the further out from the city center that you're building new schools, it's going to encourage further sprawl and gobbling up of the surrounding you know, farmland, which I mean, that's a process that's taking place, you know, I realize anyway, but this will further accelerate that. And you know, that's something I haven't heard addressed yet.
All right. Well, we can see if we can get at some of those issues.
I'll start on that. Yeah. I tell you, I'm not sure how long Savoy has been a part of the Champaign School District, because I've been here about, I'm in my 4th year, but they've been a part of the Champaign School District for quite some time. It's not something that recently occurred. And, you know, I know there's some disagreements about their taxes and whether or not they pay for the library and their support MTD and so forth. And to be honest with you, I'm trying not to let that issue overshadow the needs of our kids. We don't look at the Champaign kids in our district as Savoy kids and Champaign kids and kids from the Southwest. They're all our children, and they all deserve the very best possible learning environment that we can provide. And you know, I've been asked about even the taxes that they pay to the school district. The city of the village of Savoy, those residents pay the same tax rate as every other resident pays the school district. That we tax at a rate of $3.92, and they pay the same rate. So I really hope that adverse opinions about Savoy doesn't negatively impact the needs that our children have, because our kids deserve the very best, and they didn't choose where they live. They didn't choose their parents, and I don't think they should be punished for that. Gene, I think you want to chime in on that.
The other item the caller mentioned is sprawl. And one point I'd like to make, please, is that we don't approve these new developments. It's the Village of Savoy and it's the City of Champaign that approve these new developments in the outlying area. However, that does put us in a position where we have to serve them. Again, I think it's very important that if you're unhappy about sprawl, you need to direct that question, I think, at the appropriate agency, which is not the school district, which is forced to respond. And really, that's all we're doing, being forced to respond. And in the Savoy case, as Arthur has already said, we have 277 students, elementary students in Savoy right now, K through 5, and not a single one of those students has a proximity A school. And that's not fair to those children or those parents.
What about the issue of busing for racial balance?
We'll still be under the racial fairness guidelines. That's a part of the choice process. So 22% of the students there would need to be children of color. And we don't think that's going to be an issue because I was told that when Barstow was built, that was something that was brought up, is that the racial balance is going to be a problem. But Barstow is not racial. Well, it's within the racial fairness guidelines, which basically is between 22% and 47%. So we think that Savoy won't have a problem at all meeting those guidelines by law, the consent decree, rather, that we agreed to, which is a standard that we're held to. It has to meet those racial fairness guidelines, and we know that it will.
Well, I'm just sorry that, there can't be, people on the other side of the issue to illuminate what those questions are, too. But thank you.
All right. Well, let's go again to another caller here. This is Champaign, and it's line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
The subject of sprawl was just brought up, so this seems like a timely moment to ask the question in regard to the planned new high school. It's actually a two-part question. One is the siting of the high school so far away from where the center of the population and the center of the served children will be, and it seems unlikely that most of these children will be able to walk and or bike to the school, which many of them can do right now. Also make it very difficult for some of their parents to be able to participate in the educational process being that far away. I'm wondering if the school district has anticipated the additional energy costs once the price of petroleum goes up, as it most certainly will not go down at this moment. And I also question the size of the new high school, 1,700. Just a very basic literature review has shown that it's pretty common figure for high school sizes, 600 to 900 as ideal, and we're already well above that. And it seems like the difference between the 1,350 that are now at Central and the 1,700 that are planned for the new school is pretty much a stopgap measure before additional construction will be required. So I'd like to hang up and hear the answers to those questions.
All right. Well,
I can talk first about high school size.
Sure.
And I'll let you gentlemen answer a question about location. This is Sam Johnson. There are a number of studies that do show that have different findings about the size and student achievement. The size of 1,700 was, well, first of all, this is still vastly speculative because the only thing as part of this referendum is the site. One of the ways in which, however, school districts hope to get the academic performance that is seen in some of the smaller high schools that have been tested is to do things that are called schools within schools. So that way a school district can realize the operational effectiveness of a large school where you don't duplicate kitchens and mechanical equipment and things of that sort. But you get to take advantage of the academic benefits. So schools within a schools is a very legitimate and it's a forward-thinking approach to try and marry the balance of or marry academic performance of a smaller school with the operational effectiveness. Secondly, energy costs. The school district has been very aggressive in maintaining a line on energy costs. The types of energy systems that we will employ in new school construction will be vastly more energy effective than the current one. So our energy consumption at a new high school, despite its size, will be much, much more effective than it has been in buildings of the past. And I'll let you gentlemen.
Yes, and to have high schools with 600 to 900, and we need three high schools, and And I don't think we have plans to have three high schools. I think certainly if we did take a look at that, we certainly would have to factor in the additional cost, operational cost of having three high schools. As far as the where we build the high schools, though, the research also shows that a high school that's going to be 1,200 kids or more, you really need 50 to 60 acres because of you need adequate parking space for students, staff. You need all your athletic fields, football, band, places for the band to practice, softball, baseball. And right now, there's just not a site that's in the heart of the city that's large enough. So we're forced to go out to the outlying areas. Also, the areas that we're looking at, though, those are areas where there's a lot of future growth that is being planned by developers right now. And I think what you'll find is that in the next 5 years or so, those areas that may look like they don't have anything out there right now, you'll find that there'll be homes built and businesses that are planned right now in those areas. So even though it may not look like it's close to anything right now, we think when you look at the growth patterns of the city in the future, you'll find that it won't be just a high school out there, but there'll be homes and businesses also.
We just have about 5 minutes. We have several callers. I know there's no way that I can get them all in, but I want to try. There's someone we've been keeping waiting here in Sullivan, so let's go there. That's line number four. Hello.
Yes. I got a two or three comments.
And please be quick, because we don't have a lot of time.
We had a school here built in 1924. They had a ladies' room and a lounge, a three-story building, and it's still in operation. And I didn't have any trouble getting sick there. You know, the old snow blew through the windows. Okay, another thing is, if you're going to have a school, build one school, prototype, and if you need to add on to it, just cut a hole in the end wall and just keep expanding it one way or the other. That way you get away from all these architectural fees that are killing us. The other thing is, in Indiana, there was a school there that they had an ISTEP test. In the last 3 years, the school has consolidated. The ISTEP test has went down. The students are learning less and whatever. I think we need to stop spending all this money and this foolishness. And like the guy said in the Wall Street Journal, it isn't the facility. It's the people in the building that are teaching the children. Thank you and bye.
All right. Well, I don't know how you want to try and pick up quick on some of the comments.
Well, very quickly, there are a number of studies, David, that show there's a direct correlation between inadequate or poor facilities, meaning where there's peeling paint, where there's crumbling plaster, where there's poor lighting. There are many, many tests or many, many studies that show poor performance by students go hand in hand with those kinds of conditions. So I don't think I can agree with the last statement.
And then also, some people question the air conditioning, but it's, you know, we start a lot earlier than what we used to. And, you know, we start the last part of August. So August, September, sometimes even a couple of weeks in October, but certainly August and September, very hot. And also May. So we get 3 or 4 months where it's very uncomfortable for teachers and students. And there are also studies that show that temperature in the classroom also impacts learning. And we got these studies from a number of different sources.
That's real quick. I want to ask the architect, because an earlier caller asked about energy efficiency. I think some people have raised this question about air conditioning older buildings, whether that really makes sense, particularly if they're not going to have energy efficient windows, if there's, you know, why air condition a poorly performing and leaky building? Is that really practical?
It's a good question, and our answer is based on actual experience within the school district. In the mid-90s, the school district renovated the Kenwood School. It a univentilator system that had heating only, and they put in new univentilators with heating and cooling. And the energy costs for Kenwood are about 8 cents a square foot more than they are at the other facilities. And that's because of the controls that the school district has on usage of that facility. We are also going to be putting in, with those energy new energy systems, we're going to be putting in new temperature controls, which digital controls, which are vastly superior to the pneumatic controls in terms of energy conservation. We're also replacing windows on 4 of these facilities with new energy efficient windows, which stops the air infiltration and it stops heat gain, because we're going to have energy efficient glass. And gentlemen, what is the...
Sam, we, of course, employed one of your mechanical engineers to take another look at Kenwood, and his analysis was that it's costing us $5,000 more to heat and air condition Kenwood. So not a huge increase in utility cost to provide air conditioning. And when you multiply it by the seven other buildings that would be provided air conditioning, we're talking $35,000 annually. So it's not the hundreds of thousands of dollars that some people might be talking about.
We're real quick. I want to try to get one caller here. Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
There has been a major move in the federal government, $3.7 billion into rail trails. But the interesting thing is that the alternate forms of transportation come into the act, and people are being encouraged to go to schools, which means the schools have to be assigned to places where there are bicycle ways and walkways. And Perth, Australia is a very good example of that happening in the whole community. And so you reduce parking spaces, you reduce that traffic of people picking up kids.
Well, is that something, again, I guess it gets to this issue of where the school is. Can people walk there? Can people bike there? Can you really provide something that is truly a neighborhood school?
Again, with the plan that's been outlined, the district is reinvesting in those neighborhood schools. And, you know, they're not saying we're abandoning the inner city schools. In fact, just the opposite. We're going to continue to use them for years to come. That's what this investment is.
And then the other thing, too, is people have to be reminded that we are under schools of choice. So because of choice, then there's going to always be a significant amount of busing in the Champaign School District, and that's due to a federal court order, a consent decree that the district agreed to. And right now that's scheduled to end at the end of the 08-09 school year. But even when it does end, I think we'll always have some form of choice so that we can make sure that our schools are always integrated and they're not homogeneous.
Well, I'm sorry to say we're going to have to stop because simply we've come to the end of the time. Our guests, I want to say thanks to all three of them. Dr. Arthur Culver, he's the superintendent, Champaign Unit 4 Schools. Gene Logos, he's the chief financial officer. Sam Johnson, he's architect with BLDD, a firm that's working with the board on the proposal for these new buildings and the renovations. And to you, thank you very much all for being here.
Thank you very much.